Hi, folks. It is Wednesday night, April 22nd. You are listening to WVEWLP 107.7 FM, Brattleboro Community Radio. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm Ken.
And I'm Becca.
How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
How's your energy level?
Low, but I'm working on it. awesome.
It sounded really high there for a second. We have an amazing show for you tonight. We are welcoming writer-activist Kenyon Farrow to the show a little bit later on. He's picked some great music for us. We're going to talk to him. But first, the most important gay story of the year.
What is the most important gay story
of the year? Is it Vermont gay marriage? It is not.
It is not.
Is it all the other states considering marriage?
No.
It is not. Is it repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell?
Is it?
No.
Oh.
Becca, it's all about Miss USA.
I saw that. Woo.
People are crazy about this Miss USA thing. So
the
folks,
former Miss USA, right?
Well, no, she's the former, or she's the current Miss California. She just did win Miss USA. So folks didn't hear, and gosh, I don't know how you escaped this. Miss California, her name is Carrie Prashawn, was on the Miss America pageant. Miss USA, sorry, those are two different pageants. I don't want to get sued by the Trump agency. She was on Miss USA, and I guess you pick out of a fishbowl, and you pick the judge who's going to ask you a question. So I watched this just before we came on the air. And Miss USA picked in the punch bowl, and she picked out Perez Hilton, who I quite frankly cannot stand, except if he wants to be on our show, in which case, I love you. I don't know, he gets on my nerves. That's okay.
Should we go into the disclaimer now,
or should we wait? So she picks out of the hat, and Perez Hilton says something about, oh, Vermont's got gay marriage. What do you think about gay marriage? And so what she said was, quote, I think it's great that Americans are able to choose one or the other. And she meant gay marriage or heterosexual marriage. Quote, but in my country and in my family, I think that I believe that marriage should be between a man and a woman. No offense to everybody out there, but that's how I was raised. People are flying off the handle about, oh my God, I can't believe she said that. Quite frankly, well, let me ask you, what did you think of that?
Shocking. And by shocking, I mean, well, who put that question in the fishbowl? And why?
Well, like, yeah.
Why? Do we really need beauty queens weighing in on gay marriage? Do
exactly.
we really?
Exactly. Oh, I'm so happy.
But let's ask
this.
Them about hairspray.
Let's ask them about makeup.
I don't know. Other things. Like world peace. How do they feel about that? Are they for world peace, or do they think we should all shoot each other?
Beat the hell out of town as soon as. And she said afterwards, she said she knew as soon as she gave the answer she was not going to win. And you could see it on her face. I actually thought that she. You know, do I agree with her answer? Absolutely not. And was her answer factually inaccurate? Yes, it was factually inaccurate, because when she said, I think it's great that Americans are able to choose one or the other, well, that's only if you live in the four states that have gay marriage. So it was factually inaccurate, but she got put on the spot. She knew immediately she had lost. She stuck to her guns, and she beat the hell out of there. She was gone. She's like, but no offense to anybody, not for me. Thank you for asking that question. She just went right back to the kick line. So, but people are going crazy over there. So in Alabama, because they apparently have nothing else to do there, they are passing a resolution. An Alabama Republican state representative has drafted a resolution supporting Miss California's comments about keeping marriage rights from gays and lesbians. It was introduced by this guy, and he believes that she's being targeted. And we in Alabama need to support Miss California, who's in a beauty pageant, because this is the most important thing we have to do. And Becca, it spawned my top three favorite comments of the week.
Wait, before you go into those, I have to tell you that one of our listeners who was harassing me last week, I've got to say, or the week before when I said that California was a bad state, I just want to formally issue the correction from this particular listener who will remain nameless. It says, and I quote, Beck was right a couple weeks back. California kind of is a bad state.
Well, just on the Miss USA. And I'm just saying. I don't really fault her that much. She got put in an awkward position. I was trying to find out what the other questions people were asked, but she had to have known. You saw it on her face. As soon as they pulled the thing out of the fishbowl and it said Perez Hilton, she's like, oh, all right. Well, I guess I'm done with this pageant. But it spawned my top three favorite comments.
Okay. And they were.
Number three.
Are they really good? Are they really, like, awfully good?
I just think they're funny. Number three, and this just shows how seriously people are taking this. They're crazy about this. Carrie, Christians everywhere are grateful for you, for your inspired comment and courage. Young lady, the treasure you've laid up in heaven will far exceed anything the contest could have done for you. Be on your guard from now on, though. Our enemy and all his agents will be looking for you to slip up. May God richly bless you and keep you. Oh, my. Oh my, they're passionate.
Would you want that comment directed at you, Ken?
I would not. Number two, why don't the judges just write down the answer they want and have the contestant read it rather than give their own honest response? Then we can avoid all this in the future. Kind of agreed with that one.
Sure, why
not? A letter into that trap. And number one, my favorite comment, Perez just wanted the crown for himself, which I think that's probably true. All right, can we play some music?
Oh, we sure can.
Kenyon Farrow has requested some music, and
Kenyon Farrow gets
music.
What he wants.
Here we come. That was a song called No Parking by Sugar Rush Beat Company, as requested by our guest, Kenyon Farrow, who's going to be on the show.
Any minute now,
Kenyon Farrow's going to be on the show.
And we're so excited.
Some news from New York.
News from New York.
It keeps us going. Regarding? Two different stories that we like. We're trying to keep things upbeat this week. We were a little negative last week.
Okay, we're going
to
ignore my news stories then.
Yes, let's just stick with my positive stories.
If you want the negative stories, just go online and search.
Because you can find them pretty easily.
Just search for horribly depressing news stories. That's what I do every week.
Oh, by the way, we have no listeners in Tennessee. We've received no responses to our... So again, if you are listening in Tennessee, shoot us over an email. Don't shoot us, but shoot us over an email at thisshowissogay@AOL.com. We received only one response that was remotely connected to Tennessee, and I'm invalidating that entry.
Was it one of my relatives?
No, it was mine. It was my dad who said, I went to grad school in Tennessee. Does that count? And
no.
So if you're listening, Dad, no. And you already have
but
a magnet.
But we love you anyway.
You don't get another magnet. Two stories from New York. Both good stories. Kind of. A New York school is being sued by Lambda Legal because...
What did they do?
Well, they're, of course... preventing there from being a gay-straight alliance. Because, Becca, it doesn't matter that the research overwhelmingly shows that it's better for all students if a school has... It doesn't matter.
Does Lambda Legal just have, like, alliance. Packets already pre-made they so must. They can just mail them off? Like,
I know.
Fill in the blank. Yeah.
There's got to be someone who specializes in...
Name on it. Yeah. Just, you know, and forwarding it.
Like, intern... You need to white out. What does that say? Susquehannock? No. You need to change it to this week. Where is it? Indian River Central School District. So you need to white out that other one. Wow, you're even like booing people.
I am. I'm cranky today.
I feel like I need to abide by the rules. So
that's right. You better. You've already broken the rules once tonight. I'm going to wag my finger at you, Ken.
We will keep folks posted as to whether or not that school does indeed get a gay-straight alliance. In even happier news, the New York State Assembly passed a bill just yesterday on April 21st to prohibit discrimination based on gender identity and expression in employment, housing, public accommodations, access to credit and other key areas. The Gender Expression Non-Discrimination Act also will add gender identity and expression as protected categories in the state's human rights law. It's still got a few more things to do. It's got to go through the
Senate.
Yay,
they can't fire me if I wear a tie.
Good. That's good. That's good. Back to the other story. Yay for the gay-straight alliance.
I mean, it's good that New York has done this, but really, like, are we supposed to celebrate? Like,
we are.
Now they can't fire you for wearing a skirt.
Yes, whatever. We are celebrating what that on the show tonight. You know why? Because we're celebrating things, Becca. It's a celebratory night.
Oh, I'm in a snarky mood.
You a little bit snarky?
I didn't get the memo on the celebrating thing.
A little bit snarky. I'm a little bit hyper. And so, folks, going back to the gay-straight alliance story, the information that I'm referencing, the research I'm referencing, you can find on GLSEN's website. And I don't know how you wouldn't know, but I'm going to let you know. GLSEN is the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network, and they're at GLSEN, GLSEN.org. And click over to their research. I don't remember exactly where on the link it is, but they do an annual study where they put out there all the different stats, and they just updated it recently. And one of the stats that's out there is just how much better it is in schools if they actually have a gay-straight alliance. So
much better.
And Lambda Legal, on behalf of Lambda Legal...
And their interns. Of infinite patience.
They will support you. So if you're thinking, oh, no, my school... I live in Indian River Central School District, and they're just not going to let me have a gay-straight alliance. What do I do? Lambda Legal, they already have a brief made up. They just need to do the find function on Microsoft Word and find and replace, and they will put
swap out the school names, and they'll be set to go.
So, gay-straight alliance, it is within your reach.
And I'm sure Lambda Legal actually does far more work than we're making it out to be.
Oh, no, gosh. They do a ton of work. They do a ton of work.
So, Lambda Legal. We love you.
I did not have a good experience with them.
We'll talk about that off the air later.
They're great.
Because our opinions are not those of the station.
Well, they're just not. I had a really interesting conversation this afternoon with... a group of students and some faculty at Marlborough College.
Yeah, you had a little conference.
I had a little talk.
A little faculty panel.
About the phrase, that's so gay. Put it together in a little PowerPoint presentation. If anyone wants me to email them the PowerPoint presentation of my research.
I do.
There you go. This show is so gay at AOL.com.
I think I'll send you an email to request that you send me the PowerPoint.
Say you're in Tennessee and you get a magnet. They were saying that, asking whether or not it was important for a gay club to have the word gay or queer or lesbian in the title of the club, or if it's fine just to have the word pride. And I have to say, I hadn't really thought about it. I've never been asked that before. I think it's extraordinarily important, first of all, to have an LGBT club. So let's just start there. If the choice is naming it this or not having it at all, just have the club, because that's really important. But if you already have the club and you're debating, all right, so should the name have gay, lesbian, queer somewhere in there? I say yes.
I think we should use the term Future Homemakers of America.
Why
not? Because it sounds so Republican.
But I don't know that people are going to flock to that as the gay group.
I know.
But they're not going to know it's the gay group.
No, probably not. But how do you know that Pride is the gay group? Now that there's a rainbow coalition that's anti-gay marriage, how do we know what anything is anymore?
Wow, you're just throwing the whole world
out
of whack.
I'm so confused.
I think on that note, we're going to play a little bit more music. But first, a quick little shout out to Molly, who I know is listening, and I like to call her Malay.
Okay, Malay.
Malay, this song's for you.
comes number nine.
I'm thinking it's time to welcome a guest. How do you feel about welcoming
a
guest?
I think that's great.
Guest, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Well, there you go. Let's introduce you. Kenyon Farrow has been working as an organizer, communication strategist, and writer on issues at the intersection of HIV and AIDS, prisons, and homophobia. A current Policy Institute Fellow with the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. Kenyon is working on a report about HIV and AIDS epidemic in black gay men in the U.S. He has served as the National Public Education Director for Queers for Economic Justice, which is an organization dedicated to leadership, development, organizing, and advocacy for class issues for the LGBT community. Becca, there's so much more.
So much more.
Kenyon, there's a lot to tell about you.
Yeah.
All right, so I got
more.
You
have to add a Cliff's Notes version for us.
No, that's good. This is a good thing. But, you know, at some point we want to talk to you. He is the co-editor of Letters from Young Activists, Today's Rebels Speak Out, and the book upcoming, A New Queer Agenda. He was also named one of our favorite distinctions in 2008 as one of the Out 100 folks who contributed most to LGBT culture, looking oh so dapper in that photo. Kenyon Farrow, welcome to the show, So Gay. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing really, really well. I'm very happy to be here.
That photo is, shoot, I know, that was a long resume.
That is a long resume. That's quite a bio.
That's
and I know that there's far more. And that is a great photo. How was that photo shoot for you?
Thank you. It was a lot of fun. I mean, I was completely shocked, you know, when I got the call that I had been nominated, first of all. And then, yeah, second of all, to, you know, do the, you know, the photo shoot, you know, as well. It was really, you know, amazing. And, you know, to even see, like, we were able to see the photo that they were going to choose right after. And, yeah, it just looked great. It was just, it was, like, a really great experience.
That was a pretty
dapper.
Yeah,
it was also one of those things that, you know, mom, you know, my mom really loves and shows off to her friends and, you know,
that was your mom
like
saying
that. So it served that purpose as well, making mom happy.
And that was your mom saying, Kenyon, why don't you wear that suit more often?
Does she keep it in her wallet?
I know she was. The thing is, I don't wear suits very much. And she, you know, so she's like, see, you should wear more suits, you know, that was the thing.
Any chance you got to keep the suit?
I did not get to keep
Kenyon.
The suit. I know. I tried. I really tried to get the suit. But I, you know, as it sort of turns out, I actually have another gray suit that also, you know, fits me pretty well. Whatever. It sort of made me wear it more. Like, once I was like, oh, yeah, I guess I, you know, I clean up well, so I should do it a little more.
Oh, I would have come up with something. I would have said, you know, this suit would really help me fight for justice and equality.
Right. Totally, now you have Ken Schneck's patented line to get you a free stuff.
Hey, Denise Simmons got to keep that flower. I'm thinking Kenyon gets to keep the suit.
That's
so
true.
Anyway. All right. Well, so normally, Kenyon, we talk to you about some news. But I'm going to switch it up a little bit, if that's okay with you. And I want to talk about some things. I've been doing some research, some things that you've written. And I want to use your writing. We don't need to talk about other writers. You write stuff. So let's go with your stuff. You okay with that? Okay. So one of the articles I was reading, the one that's called Silence is Killing Black Gays as Much as HIV, and I want to just read a little bit of that. Quote, yet gay or straight, one of the problems we all face is that we believe we deserve the disease burden that is handed to us. We buy into the notion that we are pathological and accept the myths that we are more promiscuous, have more unprotected sex, and use more drugs than white gay men. If we continue to allow fear and ignorance to stop us from talking about HIV in relation to black gay men, then we as a community aren't really serious about ending HIV. It was just a beautifully written piece, Kenyon.
And thank you.
What kind of feedback did you get on that one?
I got a lot of really good feedback on it. I think there were, you know, people who, you know, responded just to sort of have, you know, we're glad that I was sort of talking about it. I think, first of all, you know, generally, I think our country has sort of forgotten that there is, you know, an HIV/AIDS epidemic, you know, in the U.S. And in fact, in some places, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, you know, Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, you know, has about a 3% prevalence rate, which is on par with, you know, some of the sort of better half of sub-Saharan Africa, right? So, you know, even countries, you know, who the epidemics are smaller than, say, you know, South Africa or other places, but it's still a very high epidemic. And so, you know, so there was that issue. And then, you know, I think one of the things that made me think about that piece was last summer, you know, I had here in New York City two black gay men who I knew personally who, within about a week of each other, you know, died of, you know, HIV-related causes. And in both cases, as their, you know, the notices sort of went out across the community, you know, through emails or whatever, letting people know that, you know, these two men had died, both of whom were out about their HIV status. One of them, in fact, had worked in HIV/AIDS services for many years, and that was completely absent from the, you know, the bios or obituaries about them that had gone out over email. And I just thought it was so, you know, just, I think, you know, it just made me realize that there's still so much kind of intense stigma and silence about it. And so I felt, you know, really to sort of begin to kind of, just to really try to break that silence and really kind of foreground, you know, the issue that
Absolutely.
Way.
Absolutely. Where are we right now as a gay community with our awareness with HIV and AIDS?
I think the conversation seems to have really slowed down. You know, aware, I think on some level that it's still, I mean, even in, while I'm, you know, sort of in that piece comparing the epidemic in black gay men to, you know, white gay men, you know, the epidemic in white gay men is still very, very high for any epidemic.
Yes.
And so, you know, so I think, you know, people are still aware, I think, because I just think that there's so many people in our community who are still living with HIV that, you know, there's no way, I think, generally that people, particularly in lots of cities or whatnot, couldn't know people who were, you know, impacted, you know, who had the virus or ways in which it was impacting the community. I do think that there is sort of a lack of mobilization in the way that, you know, we had in the, you know, late 80s and early 90s, partly because, you know, I think that the, you know, being able to, you know, the introduction of antiretrovirals and things that have kept people alive longer. I mean, I think that that really just changed the dynamics of the sort of urgency felt to do something. We were also in a particular period where the government was really doing really, you know, as little as possible in the Reagan era. So I think that those, you know, obviously those dynamics have changed. And so I think as a community, we sort of have accepted that HIV is still, you know, or is just, you know, kind of a sort of medical condition without thinking about the fact that there's really, you know, nothing. We don't have to accept the fact that our community is disproportionately, you know, burdened by HIV. We shouldn't accept that, right? And right. And I think should do more to begin to think about it, you know, again as a social justice issue.
Absolutely. And can you talk a little bit about, I mean, you just mentioned knowing a few people recently who have passed away due to HIV-related illnesses. What kind of emotions fuel you in this work? I would imagine it's extraordinarily draining. What keeps you motivated? How do you use your emotions to further this work?
I think part of it is based on the fact, and I think, yeah, it can be draining sometimes, but I think, you know, when I write pieces like that, or when I'm, you know, out giving, you know, talks, you know, in different, or on panels in different places, and what's really interesting, and I think that piece around the silence is you know, I think still very important, because I have all kinds of people come up to me, you know, afterwards and say, you know, my brother, my cousin, my father, this person, that person died of AIDS, and,
right.
you know, this is how my family dealt with it, or this, you know, or kind of talk about their lives in a particular way. And so I think I do feel in some ways like I'm in a position, you know, to be able to kind of, you know, if nothing else, kind of be reminding people that, you know, the epidemic is still around, and that it's okay to, in fact, you know, talk about it and engage it, and not, you know, kind of simply be, you know, kind of silent about it. That I think that in and of itself for me is motivating to kind of continue to do the work, you know, in this area.
Well, the other thing I wanted to read, because you touched on one of our favorite topics here on this show, So Gay, and that's leadership. And I want to read a quote for folks from the plenary session that you gave at the 21st Annual Creating Change Conference, which is a fantastic conference.
Good one.
It's a good one. So from Kenyon's plenary session, quote, "First and foremost, the time where we can pretend that there's no viable, credible, or visible black queer leadership is over. While we certainly need to be developing leaders, leadership per se is not the problem. We have lots of leaders, but leaders with no base that they're accountable to. Because what little black LGBT infrastructure that exists is largely due to HIV and AIDS service delivery. We are able to reach lots of people in our organization as, quote, clients, but are rarely engaged as potential leaders, organizers, or members of our organizations." Talk a little bit about leadership right now in the LGBT community, particularly in the black LGBT community.
This is a hot topic
This is our hot topic. We're pretty obsessed with leadership, because we know that people are looking for leaders, and we hear a lot from listeners that they're struggling to find leaders in this community.
I also think Ken is trying to get voted mayor of Gayland.
Yes. I hope I... Hey, that's... I could win that.
I don't know. Kenyon would beat you out. His resume is right. pretty impressive.
I am not running for any, you know, political office, real or imagined, including Mayor Gayland.
Yeah.
Well, our Ken might be,
yeah.
So watch out.
You know,
out.
Kenyon, okay. your intentions matter little, so we'll see what happens. But, yeah, talk a little bit about leadership and what's needed right now to move finding leaders forward in this community.
Yeah, so I think one of the critical issues I see, I think particularly to, I think the LGBT community in general, and probably, and I can say specifically about the kind of black LGBT community, is that because of the AIDS epidemic, I mean, a lot of people who were doing different kinds of community organizing, or had a range of different either arts organizations or social clubs or some kind of political organizing work, you know, got, you know, I don't say sort of sucked up, but like, you know, the impact of the epidemic sort of, you know, drove a lot of work in that particular direction.
Right.
And I think now we're in a particular time where we understand that it's not, I think, specific to, you know, black men who have sex with men, you know, as the public health term goes, that though we have the highest rates of HIV of any group in the country, it is not because we have higher rates of behavioral risk factors, right?
Right.
So unprotected anal sex, drug use, higher, rates of multiple sex partners or those things are similar or lower when you compare it to white gay men. But there are issues related to homophobia, poverty, lack of, health insurance, those sort of things that we know are driving the epidemic among our community. And yet our organizations are still primarily funded and focused to do the kind of CDC behavioral intervention models, right, which just sets up, kind of the AIDS service organizations to just kind of serve clients to do HIV testing, to do some behavioral intervention work, to do outreach and give condoms and things at different venues. And I'm saying that that's not enough. And what we need to do is actually, to do that work, which I think is important, but also be engaged in community organizing and kind of building an actual base of people to kind of shift dynamics of power, in our communities. And I think that's where, people, I think, don't see a lot of leadership. And I think what happens is some of the national organizations, there's sort of a disconnect. I think people don't necessarily see in their local communities, unless there's a state ballot initiative,
right.
Folks are trying to fight, the presence of some of the national entities, isn't really kind of grounded or connected to, particularly like kind of, working class, LGBT folk, right? Who don't see those. And so I think we need to kind of grow more, local organizations that are doing community organizing work, as well as, the general kind of AIDS service delivery that exists.
Yeah, and I was thinking about that disconnect, and I wasn't actually planning on talking about this, but I pulled it up as dovetailing off of what you were just saying. We talked about this a few weeks back with filmmaker Chastity Kirvin about an article, I don't know if you saw this one, that Jonathan L. Walton wrote on religiondispatches.com, Hitching a Freedom Ride, Gay, the New Black. And in that article he said, quite frankly, there's just too much of a disconnect for me between African Americans' long fight against slavery and segregation solely determined by the color of one's skins and the contemporary fight for same-sex marriage. And that's one of the other disconnects that a lot of people are talking about right now, that where are the priorities, and are the priorities shared by the entire LGBT community? I'm not sure.
There's a couple of things in that. I think in terms of the priorities, I will say, generally speaking, I know in the black LGBT community that there are people who, there are some people who are very interested in the marriage battle and kind of fighting for, same-sex marriage. Mm-hmm. But, or see it as an important issue, but I would say, by and large, many people in the black LGBT community do not see it as the sole nor the most important kind of fight right now. So I think that is real. I think as it relates to this question, I think often comes up about, sort of comparing the, civil rights movement,
right,
of the 1960s largely to, what's happening now in terms of, gay or LGBT civil rights stuff and whether those comparisons make sense or not. I think it's a tricky, issue because I do think the civil rights movement of the 1960s, as we think about it, you often hear now, like historians refer to that as the second Reconstruction, right? So thinking about it as the legal things that should have happened in 1865, right?
Right.
Were things that were done and then were dismantled before the turn of the century, and then we had another 100 years of Jim Crow. And so I think that is a very distinctive, specific sort of experience in the U.S. that, all black people, regardless of gender, expression, and often even class, had to sort of endure. So I think that those comparisons are very tricky.
Yeah.
I think, but what I do think the other sort of problem that happens is, and I think why sometimes African Americans and sometimes African American LGBT folks feel really sensitive about the way that that issue is sort of taken up sometimes with these comparisons to that happen in the sort of white LGBT kind of marriage movement. I think there's a real sense that, like, you know, we don't see LGBT organizations often when we're doing work around, you know, massive imprisonment around right. education system, around the New Orleans, you know, rebuilding of the Gulf Coast, or, you know, a range of things that, you know, have been, you know, kind of contemporary, you know, kind of black civil rights issues. The LGBT organizations aren't there. And so it becomes sort of empty rhetoric to sort of invoke Martin Luther King or to invoke right. the civil rights movement. But those real kind of alliances and coalitions have not been built with black communities.
Oh, I'm getting a little fired up right now. Yeah. I'm getting a little fired up. I'm like, all right, let's go.
No,
we're
going to
do something.
You have just, yeah.
That's okay. I'm running, apparently, for mayor of Gayville, so I should be fired up. So this is a good thing.
Gayland.
Gayland. All right, we're gonna do a total. Oh, go ahead.
Well, no, I wanted to ask a quick question because one thing that we've also talked about a few times is the state of blood donation through the Red Cross, and I was just wondering what Kenyon's thoughts are on that. If
wow, well, that's a really actually a very personal issue to me because in 1997, when I was 22 years old, I believe. 22, 23, I had, my father was diagnosed with leukemia and was kind of immediately hospitalized as soon as he was diagnosed. And a couple months later, we were, this is in Cleveland, Ohio, which is where I'm from, and I just graduated from college, so on and so forth, and was living with my dad in his apartment. So when, at some point, like about a month or two later, you know, the family had been asked to donate platelets, you know, blood platelets, you know, for my dad who was on chemo. You know, so I went to the hospital and, went to donate blood and had, you know, got the form that they have you fill out and then got to the, you know, 10 or 15 questions. You know, that were, you know, have you had sex with a man
right.
since 1977? You know, have you been to Haiti? Have you been to Africa? And if so, these, you know, particular countries since 1970, all these ridiculous questions. So so I, you know, go through them, and, you know, me and my, you know, naivete didn't realize really
that you were disqualifying yourself.
Yeah.
Say, I'm sorry?
That you were disqualifying yourself from that.
Yeah, I had no idea. So I asked the nurse, I said, well, can I ask you a question? And she said, yes. I said, so this first question here about having sex with a man, I said, well, what constitutes sex, right? I said to her, I'm gay. I said, and, you know, I have had oral sex with men, you know, at that point. But I've not had anal sex. So what are you talking about when you're talking about sex, right? And I said to her, I just actually have, at that point, I just had my first HIV test like a month or two before.
Right.
So it's like I just had my first HIV test and it was negative, so on and so forth. So she said, well, let me get this right. She said, she sort of whispered everything. She said, so you're gay, right? I said, yes. And she said, and you, you know, have never had anal sex, right? And I said, no. And she said, but you've done other things, right? And I said, yeah. So she said, well, I've never heard of this before.
Oh, God.
I have to go talk to my supervisor, and I'll be back. So she leaves.
Oh, my God.
For like 5 minutes, and then comes back, and she comes from around the partition and sits down next to me and, like, holds my hand and tells me that they won't allow me to donate blood.
Oh, gosh.
And so, you know, we went through this whole thing, and I said, well, I have just had an HIV test or whatever, all this stuff. And so she said, well, the tests aren't 100%,
right.
You know, accurate. And I said, well, they're not 100% accurate for anybody, if that's the case.
Whatever.
So I left there, and, you know, ended up calling, like, the AIDS hotline in Ohio, and that's when I found out about the law.
Right.
And that I was really powerless to fight it. And, you know, and I'm not sure that it necessarily would have made a difference, but my father died 2 months later in September. You know, so that issue to me is very, very personal. And, you know, and it's absurd and ridiculous, and it needs to be changed.
Right. At the same time, I feel like we're doing ourselves a disservice by politicizing it. I mean, I had a good friend who needed platelets multiple times throughout cancer treatment, and I have one of those horrible, like, deathbed agreements that I'll donate blood, and then I'm also torn because there's this boycott, basically in solidarity, and so it puts me in this position where I feel very strongly on both sides.
Yeah.
I feel very strongly that it's my obligation to donate blood. I also feel very strongly that it's my obligation not to donate blood.
This is my issue. My issue before marriage, before almost anything except for school bullying, has always been, as folks have listened, know, has been blood donation. And, you know, boycotts for me can serve the purpose of opening up opening up the dialogue, and then hopefully the goal of any boycott is going to be to open up the donor pool as much as possible. This issue just drives me batty. I love that she had to go get her supervisor, though, like you were making a return without a receipt or something like that. Like, I loved it.
It was crazy. I was like, the concept, I just couldn't imagine it. It was like beyond what she could fathom.
Oh, we wish.
What were you doing?
In the sense that I think that it, obviously in cases, I think people should donate blood because people are in need, I think that's important. I don't know that I necessarily support, we should ask people to not donate blood until the law has changed. I don't know that that's useful.
Right.
I think we can talk about or sort of politicize the issue without, I don't know if going there is useful for people who are in need.
There are some people who are in need right now.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, moving away, sharply away from politics and blood donation and everything else, this is our favorite part of the show, the one we kind of didn't tell you about, where you get to psychoanalyze yourself based on the musical selections that you provided to our listeners.
Okay.
Are you ready? So what does the song No Parking say about you?
Okay, so what that song says, I think that song kind of expresses, though it's a new song, that album came out just last year, it's like very much in my, like, kind of, it has sort of that 80s soul dance music sound that I really like. It says to me, like, oh, he's such a child of the 80s.
Nice. Nice. We accept that. And we're going to have you do one more, and it's a song that's going to play you out. How about Dance With Yesterday?
Oh, God. Okay, so that one is like my, it's like, to me, the ultimate breakup song.
Oh.
It's the best, it's the song I played the most when I broke up with my ex a couple of years ago. It's the kind of breakup song that's like a good breakup song where you're very clear about, you know, kind of needing to end something. And you see the person for who and what they are, good and bad, but you're being very grown about it, right? You're being very adult about how you choose to.
So it's a non-self-destructive, non-hateful breakup song.
Yes, it's not an Alanis Morissette You Ought to Know or Jasmine Sullivan I Bust the Windows Out Your Car. It's not one of those. It's this was great. I loved how we entered this thing. You know, you decided to walk away, but I wish you the best in the end, right? It's a good,
Well, that's so mature.
We don't really like our guests.
Did you know that we were going to psychoanalyze you? You're like, I'm going to find the most mature, wonderful, make myself look damn good.
That was really good.
I think he did that on purpose. I think he's listened to a podcast.
I'll take it.
The thing is, if you had known me maybe 10 years ago, that would have been a whole different thing.
Ooh, if you have any good Kenyon stories,
send us an email.
How he did you wrong.
But my gosh, with answers like that, you're going to get elected a mayor of Gayland before I am. That was really good.
You have some serious competition, I think, Ken.
So, Kenyon, what should people be looking for from you right now? Where should they learn more about you?
Wow, so they should check out my blog, KenyonFarrell.com, just my name there. And I'm on this tour right now with the task force talking about the gay science and whether we were born this way, the nature versus nurture argument, and what it means in terms of political advocacy. So folks should check that stuff out. And then, also doing, my work with Queers for Economic Justice, here in New York City building sort of a national alliance of LGBT progressive organizations around the country to sort of push back on the national scene in terms of what, you know, constitutes a gay issue, to broaden that a little bit.
So
folks should check me out in any of those locations, and, you know, feel free to email me on my blog and say hi.
Well, Kenyon, it is an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. You're just doing such great work, and folks, really, you really do need to check out his blog, and you need to read his words and let his words inspire you.
Kenyon, if you ever have time to come back, come back. I know you're busy, but...
Such a treat having you on. And know that if, you know, if you break up with Kenyon, he's going to dedicate a really nice song to you. So that's a good thing.
I will, in fact. And it was great. I would love to come back, so we should definitely do it again.
Great. Kenyon, thank you so much for being on the show. All the best.
Thank you. Take care.
All righty. That was a song called Dance With Yesterday by Joy. Know that if you break up with Kenyon Farrow, and why would you? Why would you do that? That would be pretty dumb. But
apparently someone's done it before.
I can't imagine.
Crazy people.
I can't imagine. Then Kenyon will we'll dedicate that song to you. So one last story. It's kind of a call to action. Just if you have an opinion. I'm not telling you what your opinion should be, Becca.
And
I'm shaking her head.
The opinions expressed on this show are not those of WVEW.
There you go. You fit it
or
in.
Of Earthworks.
So Claire's, which is some sort of mall store for tween girls and teenage girls. Have you heard of Claire's? You just blinked at me. You didn't say anything.
Right. Radio.
Claire's. All right. They have an anti-teen drinking project aimed at high school prom goers. It's their buzz-free prom campaign. And
is it jewelry that like
it is
lights up and starts sending off sirens if alcohol touches it? Because that would be cool.
I will turn this towards you so Becca can see it, but you can't because, you know, this is the radio and there are no visuals. Can you see this?
I can.
So what it is they have...
But what is it?
I'm going to tell you. It's the advertisement is go from prom king to queen in three shots or less. So on the left, it has a mannequin in a tuxedo.
With no head, but
with no head. And on the right, it has a mannequin in a prison jumpsuit with some flowers on
it.
See? You're happy that I'm highlighting this to people. So the tagline is go from prom king to queen in three shots or less. Buzz-free prom submits the hypothetical, quote, tonight his dance card is going to be full because he chose to drink underage. And instead of celebrating with class on prom night, he'll be toasting his new best friends. Implying that he'll be in jail and that's where his new best friends are. So if you perhaps have an opinion on this and you wanted to let your opinion known to the folks over at Claire's, what we saw is they have an email address called buzzfreeprom@yahoo.com. So perhaps if you had an opinion
about that. No one in their marketing department thought, maybe not a good idea.
No, they were saying, oh, we didn't mean homophobic or, you know, rape. We meant... don't go to jail. So on behalf of this show is So Gay, we endorse the platform of not drinking underage, certainly not when you're going to your prom or if you're driving or anything like that.
Maybe they meant jail in Queens?
No, not so much.
Is there a jail in Queens? I'm sure there is.
I don't.
Probably not a prison, but there's probably a jail.
I don't know.
Maybe that's what they meant. Place.
No, I don't know. So you should let your voice be heard on that because homophobia,
what
not
Ken meant
the
to
way
say,
to get your expression across.
What Ken meant to say is yes. He'll be contacting
I'll
them.
I'll be contacting them.
I'll probably be contacting them.
You should contact them. And if other people wanted to do that, we're just giving you the tools to do so, in no way telling you what to say. And that's buzzfreeprom@yahoo.com and tell them how terrible their ad campaign is. So, you folks have been listening to... I like making you shake your head at me.
You're getting the finger wag. That's it.
If folks want to get in touch with us, you should go stroll on over, skip on over. After you send an email, walk on over to thisshowisogay.com.
Are you trying to say gay people skip?
They might. I've skipped in my life. I skipped yesterday. I did. There was a puddle. I skipped. It was right over the puddle. It was fun. So you should go to thisshowisogay.com. Send us an email at thisshowisogay@aol.com. Go to our Facebook group, which you can link to off of our website. You can go subscribe to the iTunes feed, which is also off our website. And very soon on our website, buy all your This Show Is So Gay tchotchkes. We will be linking up to the t-shirts and the magnets by popular
tchotchkes.
Demand.
Wow. Yeah,
our own tchotchkes. If you're from Tennessee, you should send us an email and you'll get a magnet. And if you have suggestions for our tagline contest, it's over. Someone sent us more suggestions, and I appreciated them, and I thought that was very nice, and they were very clever. But
clever, some of them.
Some of them were good.
Some of them were really clever, some just sort of.
But the tagline contest is sadly over, folks. So we, as we did last week, will again congratulate our winner, Carrie, and her children, Lily.
Yay. Yay, Carrie.
Jackson.
Congratulations. You win.
Yeah, she does win. It's very exciting. And Maggie. Sorry, I have to say all of her children's names. So
yeah, you can't skip one.
No,
that's
that
bad.
Would be terrible. On behalf of This Show Is So Gay, we want to wish you a most fabulous week. And remember, folks, why be gay when you can be so gay? I'm just like my party. The life of the party. I light up the TV. Arrested for TV. Slammer, the time without glamour. Time stood still without my painkill pill. Don't need a lawyer, I got Diane Sawyer. She'll interview me and prove that I'm not guilty. I'm a reef for none, I'm a much better woman. Did a 12-step program and now I can drink again. She
pleasure. Cheers to the moon.